Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. General Motors is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy as of today. It's been a long time coming. Now it's here. Many, many public billions invested and more headed in. The American government emerging as the company's number one shareholder, the majority shareholder, the boss. This hour On Point, we'll get the details, talk with Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm about the impact, and look at what it means for the country and for GM for the U.S. government to be so deep in U.S. business. This business. You can join the conversation where Bush and Obama write to rescue GM. Do you see a leaner, meaner, successful GM emerging? What will it mean to have the federal government at the table with majority control? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear a bit later in the hour from Governor Granholm. Joining me first today from Detroit is David Welch, Detroit Bureau Chief for Business Week magazine. David, thanks very much for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Tom.
President Obama, as we speak, not quite to the microphone yet, but he's expected to say the federal government will be in and out. Is that how it looks in Detroit? Do people expect a short government involvement here or a long one?
I think it's going to be fairly long. Basically, what the government has told us so far is that they think the bankruptcy will take 60 to 90 days, but they say GM will be a private stock, as in not tradable on the market, for anywhere from 6 to 18 months. And, that's the amount of time it'll take for the total reorganization and getting the company ready to be listed and traded again. But the government will own 60% of that stock, the Canadian government another 12.5%. And, the UAW, the United Auto Workers, through a medical benefits trust fund will own 17.5%. So you have all these major stakeholders, and you've got to find a way to sell that stock. It has to be publicly listed, and then you've got to find some buyers for it. So I think the government will be in for quite a while. Plus, the value of the company has to get to be such that any of these constituents who own a stake in this company can get a decent return on it. So they can't sell it immediately under any condition. GM has to come roaring back first, build some value, and then have a security or stock that's tradable.
David, bankruptcy means losers, hopefully some winners. Who's given up what to make this deal happen, and who hasn't given up?
Sure. Well, with the UAW has given up a lot of jobs. GM is going to announce later today another 11 plants are going away, and they'll tell us later this morning which ones. But the UAW is also, they were owed $20 billion to start this voluntary employee benefits association called AVEBA, which pays medical benefits the same way a pension fund would pay pension benefits. It was supposed to be $20 billion in cash. Instead, they're getting 17.5% of the new GM, $2.5 billion in cash, and $6.5 billion worth of preferred stock that pays a decent dividend. But it's not $20 billion, so they're going to have to, they've got some skin in the game here, because GM is going to need to come roaring back so that they've got enough money to pay all their benefits without having to cut their own member benefits. The bondholders are taking a big haircut. You know, they're getting 10% of GM in exchange for $27 billion in bond debt, but they'll never be made whole on that. So they're taking a big haircut. The Treasury Department's not even sure they will recoup all of their money. And, of course, the big loser in all of this is you will see a lot of jobs, both white-collar and blue-collar, go away. And, that's the really tough part. And about 1,600 dealers will just have their franchises yanked as well, and they'll be out of business, at least with that one GM franchise that each of them has.
GM's hourly domestic workforce was 600,000 at its peak. When this is all over, any sense of what that number might be?
Well, they've got about 54,000 right now, and I could see, after these plant closings, maybe getting down to 40,000 or less. So, it's a really, really steep decline from, even just 10 years ago when they still owned Delphi Corporation, which was their big parts unit. They had well over 200,000 union workers in the late 90s.
David, you've used the phrase roaring back, GM roaring back a couple of times. What would that mean? Roaring back looking like what would success mean now that with this leaner, meaner, smaller GM? What would it look like?
Well, smaller is one of the big points, if you will. You're talking about a company that has about 19% of the U.S. car market now. As they cut back more, they think they can keep 18.5%. Most analysts think it'll be 14-17%. So less presence in the U.S. They're giving up control of their Opel unit in Europe. So there'll be a minority player there, so they won't own that. So in that sense, they'll also be a smaller company. They won't even be challenging Toyota for the global lead in car sales. That's been gone for a while, but they won't even have the footprint to make a challenge there. The good news here is that by taking this huge stake, 60% in General Motors, the government is forgiving a lot of GM's debt. In other words, other than $9 billion of the upwards of $50 billion that they're going to loan the company, the rest of it doesn't have to be paid back. The government's hoping to get its investment back if GM stock does well. And the reason that's a good thing, if you're General Motors, is the company's had too much debt for too long, and the interest payments and the cash calls on that debt were killing them. It's money that could have gone into new models, R&D, making hybrids, more marketing, whatever, just being a car company that was going into just old debt payments. So they will be much less indebted. They'll also have four brands instead of eight. Another major problem the company had was trying to feed eight brands with new cars, marketing, and advertising, and they just couldn't do it. And that's why some of them really suffered and the public lost interest in them. There just wasn't enough new and interesting there. So, leaner in that sense.
The White House said in a statement last night that the federal government will be managing the taxpayers' investment here and its ownership stake in GM in a hands-off commercial manner. Does Detroit believe that the White House will own 60% but not really be calling shots?
They'll certainly be calling shots. What the government is saying is they won't get involved in day-to-day decisions like deciding on this advertising campaign or which model ought to be picked over that one. But just look at what they've done so far. The Treasury Department came in, they fired the chairman and CEO, Rick Wagoner. They've cleared away more than half the board, and they're going to have a big role in naming the new board. When GM offered the bondholders a stock for debt exchange, the bondholders made a counterproposal that CEO Fritz Henderson said he couldn't even consider because it didn't fit Treasury's requirements. So there are major decisions like that are going to still be heavily influenced by the government. And also, I think the government has pressured GM to make small cars and that sort of thing, and more fuel efficient models. You'll see some of that. They probably needed to do a lot of that anyway. So there will be government input on major strategic decisions. In fact, they may even make some of those. And then probably on some of the smaller ones, you'll at least have some influence or some nudging.
Government input on major strategic decisions. I mean, we are on new turf here. It's going to be really something to watch. I hope we can keep in touch with you, David, as it unfolds. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Sure. Glad to be here.
David Welch, Detroit Bureau Chief for Business Week. Joining me now from Detroit is Logan Robinson. He spent a lifetime in the heart of the U.S. auto industry as top international lawyer for Chrysler, as general counsel for huge suppliers Delphi, ITT Automotive, and Metadyne. He's now professor of law at the University of Detroit Mercy. Logan Robinson, thanks very much for joining us.
A great pleasure to be here, Tom.
You're an old hand in this world. What do you see emerging with what's unfolding today?
Well, I think the government is going to be in this for a very long time, certainly through the course of this administration and beyond. There's a long history of national involvement in the automotive industry from the USSR to the UK. It's never gone well. I think what we're looking at here is the triumph of hope over experience. I do believe that the government had to intervene, had to provide some liquidity for this industry. In that sense, I think President Bush in December and President Obama in March made the correct decisions. But I think subsequently they've gotten off track a bit, and it has turned more into a big government, big labor, big green reorganization, which I think is going to make it very tough for GM to compete against the world-class competition it faces, the Toyotas and Hondas of this world.
Federal government involved through this administration and beyond. What do you mean when you say 2012, 2016, if Obama has a second term? Are you really talking in those terms?
I don't know if we will ever see a day. If you define it as GM being a profitable, publicly traded company without government investment or government ownership. I don't know if we will ever see that day.
But the Obama White House is suggesting just as strong as it can, it takes exactly what they want as soon as possible.
Yes, indeed, and history will play its course here. But remember that GM has been in a lot of trouble for a long time. Market share was once over 50%. Now the current run rate is just under 20%. So things have got to really change and change in a very competitive world. Now, there have been some cost reductions, no question about it. The new UAW agreement, I see as an improvement, but it is still a very intrusive agreement in everything from sourcing, product, investment commitments. Reductions in the retiree benefits are there, but nevertheless, it's kind of gone from a gold-plated to a silver-plated standard. After 25 years in the industry, I certainly wish I had as good a deal as the current retiree deal. Some of the most egregious things are gone, like the jobs bank, or not really gone, but suspended.
Paid even when not working, yep.
That's right, that's right, that folks could play cards in the cafeteria if there was no work for them and earn almost their full salary. But nevertheless, we see an agreement which is still not competitive with the strong foreign transplants in this world. I would add to that the new CAFE law is going to be very tough for GM, because where GM has really been market dominant is in the big cars, in the trucks. And now they're going to be forced to compete on hybrids and small cars with people like Toyota, which are already on their third generation of the Prius.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about General Motors, GM, in bankruptcy, and what it means for the U.S. economy to have the government so deeply involved in this American business. We've been joined from Detroit by Logan Robinson. He's been in the biz for a long, long time. And we're joined right now from Lansing, Michigan, and very glad to be so, by Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm, Democratic governor since 2003. Governor Granholm, thanks a lot for being here.
You bet, Tom.
So how do you characterize this day? GM's in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Great day, rescued, new horizon. How do you see it?
All of the above. It's very tough for the families who have relied upon General Motors as their main source of employment. It's certainly hard for the communities who are going to be affected. There are seven plants that of the 14 that are going to be affected by 2012, seven of them are in Michigan. That's thousands more jobs. Times are very tough, but so are we. So on the flip side, the silver lining is that we know that at least we can see the bottom. There's still going to be some ripple effect from on the part of the suppliers as a result of today's announcement, but we know now that there will be an end. And frankly, I'm grateful that the federal government is committed to having a viable auto industry and a viable manufacturing sector. I'm grateful that the bleeding is going to be over. I was saying a little bit earlier today that I feel like a patient that's been undergoing painful treatment for 9 years, and the doctor says, well, we've got one more painful operation. It's going to take you a few months to heal, but then the prognosis is good and the cure is on the way. So I feel like at least we can put an end to this bleeding that we've been seeing since the year 2000.
What's the guarantee that the bleeding is over? The federal government will have $50 billion or something like that invested here, but there's still a lot of competition out there. GM does not have a track record in the kind of smaller, high-efficiency cars that are supposed to now maybe become its backbone. What's the guarantee that the bleeding is over?
Well, I don't think, nobody has any guarantees, clearly. But the General Motors now will have a balance sheet that is a competitive balance sheet. They will have UAW agreements that are competitive with the foreign transplants. They will have lightened their load significantly and identified the product lines that they can be competitive in. This restructuring is intended to position them to be economically competitive. And that's exactly why there's some hope, is that it is you know, 90 days. We've seen with Chrysler, obviously, they've been able to consummate the sale with Fiat, and that positions them to emerge from bankruptcy in record time. If that same kind of focus is placed on General Motors and their restructuring, we can see it's much more complex. I understand that, but it's at least we can see that by the end of the summer, we should have a General Motors that has emerged from bankruptcy leaner and stronger, and yes, greener as well.
Federal government with a 60% position here, majority control. You heard our guest Logan Robinson say he expects the government to be in this through the Obama administration and beyond. That could mean past 2016. How long do you think?
Well, I can tell you the Obama administration has been extremely strong in saying they do not want to be an ongoing operation of the federal government. They want to position General Motors for success, allow them to emerge from this, becoming more competitive, and get out as quickly as possible. They're not going to be making management decisions. They're not going to be deciding on what kind of vehicles and what kind of cup holders they're going to be having. They want to be able to position them for strength and allow us as a nation to have a viable manufacturing industry, of which the auto industry is the backbone.
What do you think it means that the UAW will now own 17.5%? Historically, they've pushed very hard for good packages for the workers. That's their job, but many economists have said that has led to GM not being competitive. Is the UAW going to have a different attitude when it's actually at the table as a big-time owner of a big chunk here?
Well, they certainly have an investment. They are invested in the success of General Motors. They are invested in the success of them winning globally, and that means global competition. So I think it's healthy to have those who are doing the work on the line understand and be a participant in the creation of a successful company. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Governor, you've been around politics a lot. You know how this works. If you look at the defense industry, where the government has such a big presence, politics are all over what happens in that industry, what gets built and what doesn't. Why will the auto industry be different if the federal government is the majority owner?
Well, I mean, I think the defense industry is an interesting analogy, Tom. I mean, in the defense industry, we've decided as a nation, like many other nations, that it's in our national interest, that we have a critical national need to be able to make products here, that we control our nation's defense and the production of the things that will make us safe as a nation here. And I think that's exactly what needs to happen in some aspects of the manufacturing sector, especially when it comes to creating the means to be energy independent as a nation.
But that sounds like subsidizing forever, which is...
No. I mean, one of the biggest pieces of energy independence is making sure that our transportation needs are met here, that we are independent of foreign oil because we have a national interest in making that happen. It doesn't necessarily mean subsidies. What it may mean is that there are incentives out there to make that happen. Many other countries invest in the research and the development and the technology to take breakthrough technologies to scale. With respect to the auto industry, the breakthrough technology that needs to be taken to scale is the electrification of the vehicle, and that means the lithium-ion battery, which will be part and parcel of the electric car. Well, right now it's expensive to do those lithium-ion batteries, but as other nations are doing, investing in the research and development because they see it as a critical national need, so must the U.S. government understand and invest in those breakthrough technologies until we take it to scale, until we get it to the China price, if you will, so that it can be globally competitive. There are aspects of the production of energy, alternative energy, and certainly electric cars that need to have a partnership with the federal government, at least at the outset, and certainly with respect to the infrastructure associated with it. And this is one area where I think it's important for us as a nation to plant a stake in the ground.
Governor, we've got a lot of listeners in your state. Would you take a couple of callers from your backyard there?
Sure.
Frank in Detroit, you're on with Governor Granholm.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. My first feeling is we really didn't have an opportunity to just talk about it as if this were socialism. I think that's a conservative talking point. Without the government intervention, you'd be looking at panic in this city right now as you faced liquidation. A lot of things killed GM. First and foremost, the rejection of single-payer health many, many decades ago. The legacy cost built and built and built, and they were still, you know, expected to provide health care for current workers as well as retirees. That was a foolish move. But they were in love with SUVs and big, gigantic cars and made no contingency plans that if there were a spike or an oil crisis and those prices shot, you know, off the map like they did last summer, they had no contingency plans for that.
And Frank, let me put just that to the governor while we've got her, and I appreciate your call from Detroit. Governor Granholm, Frank says there would have been panic in the streets in Detroit without a government intervention.
That's exactly right. I mean, I shudder to think what would happen. We would have liquidation. These companies would be gone, and therefore the suppliers would be gone, and therefore the manufacturing infrastructure of our country would be on its last legs. So without this extraordinary action, we would really, I think, be a much weaker, certainly, city of Detroit, certainly state of Michigan, but nation as well.
Let me get one more from Tina for you. East Lansing, Michigan, really in your backyard. Tina, you're on the air with Governor Granholm.
Hi, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I had a question about is why didn't the government give money incentives for people to buy GM cars? I'm concerned that, first of all, ever since we moved to Michigan, we bought an Oldsmobile because, you know, we're in East Lansing, and I worked for Michigan State. I'm a Michigan State retiree. My husband is a government retiree. We get our retirement from the state of Michigan, and I don't know why some of our colleagues, you know, went off and bought Lexus and, you know, when they could have bought a Cadillac. I don't understand people's lack of concern for, you know, helping Americans, helping American jobs, helping all the suppliers. Our schools are closing. You know, the state of Michigan is in very difficult times because people don't think of the good of the country.
Tina, let us pick it up with the governor, and thanks
Preach
for your
it,
call.
Sister. Preach it. I'm totally in agreement with her, and I hope that Congress passes this cash for clunkers bill, a version of which was passed in Germany, and they saw a huge increase in support for German-made vehicles, a big uptake in the consumer demand. I mean, these companies are not just American companies. All companies that are manufacturing vehicles right now, we know, are the victims of what's happening with the global recession. People are not buying cars. So let's provide some incentives for this demand for there to be an uptake in demand. And folks, I mean, everybody who's listening, you as taxpayers now are part owners of these companies. So let's support the home team. Let's support those who are making these cars, your neighbors in communities all across the country, and the suppliers, and the people who you may not even realize are benefited by having a strong manufacturing sector and a strong auto industry. It's the steel industry. It's the glass industry. It's the electronics industry. It's the plastics industry. This is the most technologically advanced mass-produced product in the world. And if we give that up, if we don't even support our own home team, then we will be the ones to suffer from that. So I say buy it. Buy it. If it's made in America, buy it so you can support your own neighbors, and your own taxpayer dollars will be invested on your behalf.
There's the appeal right out of Michigan from Governor Jennifer Granholm. Governor, thank you very much for being with us today.
You bet. Thanks, Tom.
We have Logan Robinson on with us from Detroit, Michigan. He's been chief legal counsel right up at the top of many auto suppliers for many years. We're joined as well right now from Pittsburgh by Alan Meltzer, professor of political economy and public policy at Carnegie Mellon University, visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Professor Meltzer, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Good afternoon. I'm sorry. Hi, Tom.
Hi. It's great.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you. You hear the governor right there saying, please buy American, and she is feeling confident that GM will be smaller but leaner, meaner, and ultimately successful with this big intervention and bankruptcy. Are you confident?
No. I agree with Logan. The government is in this. It's in it for the long term, probably. The taxpayers are in it up to their neck, and they're going to be in up over their head. We've seen automobile companies fail for decades. We used to have cars called Packard, Hudson, Nash, before that, Hupmobile, Cord, and way back into the 20s, hundreds of car companies. They failed. I live in Pittsburgh, as you said. We've had the steel industry here. We used to be the world's largest producer of steel. We don't produce much steel here anymore. The country didn't fall apart. people did other things. We've had years of prosperity. We currently have a recession. We've had recessions before. This is one of the most stupid things I've seen the government do for the domestic economy in my lifetime.
Logan Robinson, Alan Meltzer, conservative economist, says stupid thing for the government to be involved here. You said earlier they had to be involved. Why?
Well, I think initially we did have a systemic risk issue. We had a real liquidity crisis. Governor Granholm is correct that there would have been a real domino effect here if in, say, December or March, instead of providing short-term liquidity, we had pushed these companies into bankruptcy, because bankruptcy at that point would not have been Chapter 11 reorganization. It would have been Chapter 7 liquidation, because there was simply no one other than the government who would have provided the funds to get them through a bankruptcy, the so-called debtor in possession or DIP funding. What that would have meant was really a cold, hard liquidation. That means people simply not getting their paychecks and being told to go home. If Chrysler and GM had gone bankrupt and into liquidation, that would have immediately toppled the supplier base. And a lot of folks don't appreciate that most of the gadgetry in a car is not made by the person who's got their name on the car. It's made by an army of suppliers and sub-suppliers who employ hundreds of thousands of people. They're in bad shape right now, and a liquidation of GM and Chrysler would have forced them into liquidation. That would have meant that Ford, which has tried to stay out of this, would have been brought down too, because they couldn't get parts. The transplants would have been very much weakened, and I think we would have really had an economic catastrophe. So I do support those elements, but then I think the government, and this is what governments do, they went too far. They developed a political agenda, and they actually decided they should own this company, which I think is a mistake.
Alan Meltzer, a systemic meltdown if the government had not stepped in, an economic catastrophe. I think I read you sat down at some point with Hank Paulson back when the Bush administration was still moving to this rescue, and you came out of there thinking he had no plan, but Logan Robinson says without it, we might have seen the whole economy go down.
Well, that's conjectural. Maybe it wouldn't have made it through Chapter 11 back in December. Maybe it was right for the government to lend them some money to keep them going. But I agree with Logan. They've gone too far. They should have gone into Chapter 11. We have lots of experience with companies going into bankruptcy over hundreds of years. You know, the disasters are rare. The other example is we rescued AIG, the big insurance company. We put in now $180 billion. We're not done. We're not done with the amount of money that taxpayers are going to put into General Motors and Chrysler. There's going to be time before Fiat is able to manufacture small cars in the United States. Ford is manufacturing a car that gets very good mileage in a hybrid. General Motors is going to manufacture the Volt. It's going to cost, they say, $41,000. The government has already put in one of its bills, a subsidy to anybody who buys that car of $7,500. How long is that going to go on? Forever?
But you say that it should be Chapter 11. It is Chapter 11, but you're saying it should have been Chapter 11 without the government billions? GM says it couldn't make it.
What does that mean? What does Chapter 11 mean? It doesn't mean all the plants are going to close, that all the people are going to lose their jobs. It means that someone is going to have to come in and buy the parts of the company that are good and get rid of the parts of the company that are weak. This is a bailout of the unions at the expense of the bondholders and at the expense mostly of the taxpayers.
Alan Meltzer, please stand by.
It's going to go on and on and on.
We've got to take a short break here. Alan Meltzer, Logan Robinson in Detroit. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking today about General Motors, GM, in bankruptcy as of today, and what that means for the U.S. economy, what it means for the economy to have the government so deeply involved in this huge American business, huge but a lot smaller than it used to be. Logan Robinson is with us. He's former general counsel at big suppliers, auto suppliers, Delphi, ITT Automotive, Metadyne, was head of international legal for Chrysler. He's now professor of law at the University of Detroit, Mercy. He joins us from Detroit. From Pittsburgh, Alan Meltzer is here, professor at Carnegie Mellon University, visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, author of History of the Federal Reserve. He's working on Volume 2 right now. Let's get a call right from the heart of things. Pontiac, Michigan. Bob, you're on the air, Bob.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I was wondering, we were just told this morning that our plant is going to close.
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Also, our plant was the highest quality and most profitable plant for building trucks in the United States. And I am confused how the government, if they're overwatching us so carefully and they are going to ruin General Motors, why didn't they keep an eye on which plants they're opening and closing?
Maybe they won't ruin it. Maybe they're saving it right now. But what model have you been making there, Bob, in Pontiac?
Oh, the pickup trucks, mostly heavy-duty trucks in Pontiac.
And it's closing for sure. It's going away.
Yes, we had Bill Boggs, the regional person from General Motors, came this morning and told us.
Did he put a date on it?
First.
By October 1st?
October 1st.
What do you think you'll do personally, Bob, on the other side of that?
I'm not too bad off because I've been here more than 30 years, and I'll either get laid off and have to retire or get transferred to another plant, hopefully.
Where do you put responsibility for what's happened to GM over these years? With management, with the big union contracts? How do you look at it?
Mostly both together. Well, mostly I believe it's the management because they were in control of the money and what we spent on which improvements or not improvements. And things like the job bank weren't a bad idea, but I also believe that the company wanted that to keep people around that they needed. It wasn't just for UAW people.
30 years in your case, and it's going away in October. Bob, we wish you luck there and luck to everybody in Pontiac, Michigan. Thank you very much for calling. Let's get one more from Spartanburg, South Carolina. Bert, you're on the air, Bert.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I own an independent shop, a 14-bay shop. My thoughts are that we should not bail them out for the simple fact, and this will hurt me in finding parts from my dealership to repair these cars with or aftermarket parts. Will affect me, but when we opened our shop, we bought the property, we built our building, we planned ahead that if things were tight, we could afford to pay our bills with half of what we're making now, and we have a very good business. But my point being that and I know I'm going to step on some toes, but with these big contracts the UAW's got, these type things, I couldn't make it. Now, the average independent guy could not pay what these guys make. And still make ends meet. You've got to let things go.
And you're saying that as a guy who owns a 14-bay auto repair shop. If GM had just liquidated, though, what do you think that would have meant for the American economy?
It would have affected me. It would have affected me personally. But I have always planned. We live within our means. We are able to cut back if we have to. And still make it. I mean, like the gentleman said, the caller said a little earlier, a lot of companies have come and gone, and maybe they weren't as big as GM or Chrysler, but they come and go. That's life. That's the way things work out. And I hate it for these people that will lose their jobs, but, you know, we cannot keep bailing people out. We cannot keep. If people would get sick on their stomach if they knew the type of money that we have to pump out right now before this bailout money, just to make ends meet. So if we can cut the cost and do what we need to do to keep our head above water, then I think they're not going to bail out the little guy, and I'm not looking for bailout. I'm just saying,
yeah.
We tighten up where we have to, And we do what we have to keep our head above water. And I don't think that the general public should have to bail out GM, Chrysler, or any of these others. I'm sorry to ramble on, but
Bert, we got it. We appreciate your call very much in Spartanburg. Logan Robinson, Jennifer Granholm sees a good scenario out there as a possibility that could work out here on the other side of this bailout. Maybe some of those billions back in the U.S. Treasury and U.S. GM leaner, meaner, and successful. Bert says they shouldn't have done it. You hear the pain from Bob, who's in Pontiac, right in the middle of it. Do you see a road through this, Logan Robinson? You've been in it a long time. That could work out very well. Let's not be all gloom and doom here, maybe.
Well, first of all, let me say that that my garage is full of fine General Motors products. I drive a Yukon Denali. My wife drives a Cadillac SRX. My son drives a Chevy Equinox. GM has done well in these big cars, and we're satisfied. The rest of the cars that I've bought are Chryslers. And I wonder sometimes how many Detroit 3 vehicles are in the garages of the president's automotive task force. So I want these companies to succeed, but I think that the government has made some missteps. First of all, I think that Chrysler should have been merged with GM, not with Fiat. The idea of the American taxpayer giving Chrysler to Fiat is something that I really can't agree with or make any sense of. Also, I've mentioned that we failed to get a really competitive agreement with the UAW, so GM remains at a significant disadvantage, both in terms of the wage rate, but the wage rate is the least of the problem, really. It's all of these controls and bargaining on things like sourcing, product, and investment that GM's competitors don't have. I think the green agenda has been very troublesome for the industry at this time, particularly these extremely harsh new CAFE laws for companies that have had a real trouble with compliance in the past. And frankly, then I think the idea of the government going from being a creditor, which I think they had to be, to an owner, I think will bring many unintended consequences. You know, you can tell a cat not to be a cat, and you can tell Congress not to be Congress, but the cat's going to be a cat, and the Congress is going to be Congress, and they're going to continue to want to impose a social agenda on these companies, which I think GM will not be able to afford.
But Alan Meltzer, you say there shouldn't have been intervention perhaps much at all. On the other hand, a lot of people are going to be looking at this and saying, well, there wasn't this kind of intervention for decades, and GM somehow drove itself into an awfully deep ditch here. Everybody knows going forward we have to have better mileage somehow. They didn't accomplish that. At a certain point, you know, it's not that it was doing so great in private hands, and maybe a little, you know, boot in the hinder from Washington is what it needs.
Well, you know, if you look around, you find out that there are very successful car companies operating in the United States, not just Honda and Toyota, but BMW, Hyundai. They're here. They make money, not this year, but they make money on average. They're able to produce cars that people want to buy. They're ahead in technology. What is so bad about that? GM failed the market test. I often say capitalism without failure is like religion without sin. It doesn't work. What we need is to strengthen the capitalist mentality in the United States, not to weaken it, which is what this does. We have to equate the idea that if you can't make a product that people want to buy, then you shouldn't be making products. Now, it's tragic that so many people are going to lose their jobs, and it is tragic that we're facing the problems that these people are going to face over the next couple of months. But it's also tragic that the rest of us are going to be paying large sums of money permanently or for a long time to support companies that can't make it. Once the government is involved in these, are they going to admit failure or are they going to keep plowing money back? The history of government involvement in almost anything is they don't admit failure until they absolutely have to.
George W. Bush and Hank Paulson, the previous administration, got us firmly on this road to rescue. Obama's White House is now saying that they're going to be in there just as brief a time as possible, that they don't want to be involved in commercial decisions. They want to essentially be in and out. Why shouldn't they want that? I mean, do you think Washington, with everything else going on, really wants to run GM?
No, it probably doesn't. But look what's happened with AIG. As it needs more money, the taxpayers are asked to put up more money. We had a company that could have gone bankrupt back in September, October. It would have lost money in one division. It had three divisions it could sell. Here we are, $180 billion now going up, and we're not going to be able to sell the three good divisions get enough money to pay for the losses that we've incurred and are going to incur. So what does the government do? It doesn't admit failure. It throws more money in. What's going to happen with GM? It's going to be the same thing. As time goes on, they're not going to make an adjustment and tomorrow be producing cars that people want to buy.
I agree with everything the distinguished professor just said. I think that people tend to fall in love with their projects. These investment bankers who are making these decisions kind of view themselves as masters of the universe, and Tom's Wolf words. They like the power. They like the perks. They like the emergency calls from the Secretary of Treasury and all of this. And they fall in love with it, and they think they can do a better job, and they will be very invasive here. And everyone at GM knows who's really running this thing, and they won't make a decision until the task force says, yes, that's what you need to do.
But let's take
and
your perspective for a minute, for a second. Barack Obama's crew is not exactly politically inept. Even if you're totally jaundiced looking at what they want to do here, if you don't think it's going to work out so well, why would they want to be left holding the bag? Why wouldn't they want to get out of this thing, even if it ends up expensive, if they have to get out before taxpayers maybe somehow wonderfully get paid back that $50
billion? They do want to get out. They do want to get out. But the problem is they can't get out without some kind of arguable success. And I don't know if they can produce that success. And in the long run, politicians want to get reelected, and reelections means votes, and votes tend to mean jobs and popular social policies. They don't mean profitability.
Look at the decision that they made about the car dealers. Why were the car dealers told you have to close? Why wasn't that decision left up to independent businessmen who invest their own money and decide whether they want to stay in the business or whether they want to leave the business? No, the government decided we're going to decide who sells the cars.
I just think it's hard to make the case, though, that GM on its own did so very well over all those years. If that's the case, why are we in the situation we're in now? Let me get a call from Newton, Massachusetts. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
In this discussion and other discussions I listen to about Detroit, there is just so little discussion about quality. I had a Chrysler that died after 40,000 miles.
When did you have it, Cindy? How long ago?
That was about 15 years ago,
okay.
But last year we had a ditch a Ford that died after 40,000 miles, after it just kept dying on the road. And I have a Toyota that was made in America, and it is tragic about the jobs, and I feel terribly for these people. But I would not buy a car that wasn't Japanese or Korean or something at this point. I just don't want to have my car in the shop all the time. Who can deal with the inconvenience? And, in fact, on Car Talk this weekend, a caller called in with some problem, and they said, well, you have to expect to have big trouble after owning a car for after 200,000 miles. And then they said, well, except for Honda, Hyundai, Toyota, et cetera. So they're critical of American cars.
There's the skepticism still out there. Cindy, our time is short before we run and hit the wall here, but I appreciate your call. Let me get one more from Detroit, since this is really coming down on Detroit. Mike in Detroit, you're on the air. Thanks.
Hi. I'm just calling that you're missing two key points, that GM is in this mess because of the government's financial disaster. They precipitated this fall here. And the
what do you mean? I mean, GM was its market share has been slipping for a long, long time. Its quality, we're told, has been improving, but its market share certainly wasn't.
Yes, all the market surveys show that quality is right up there with Toyota. We're tied with Toyota. Actually, we're ahead of them. We're building cars that people want. Otherwise, we wouldn't be the number one car maker in that regard. So people keep saying we're not building the right cars. We're building cars that will sell, that what people want to buy, not what the government wants us to.
But those SUVs were not selling last year when gas was up around $4.
Yeah, because of the government situation. Government screwed things up so badly, and no one talks about the Congress with the part they played in this. If we didn't have the financial problem, GM was well on its way to becoming a better company. It had worked out incentives with the or modifications to the union contracts. It has all kinds of things in place. I have inside information on that. We were doing very well on the right road, but the financial disaster with people cutting back on purchasing everything precipitated the whole problem. But nobody blames the Congress, which is really at the root of this.
Well, I mean, I think this is a situation where we've got to look globally, but including at home being Detroit here, I guess. But Mike, thank you for your call. Logan Robinson, here we are. It's, the spring of 2009, and the federal government's in with both feet, not alone. Canada's in there, too, the UAW. Bondholders may be coming. They'll be there with their reduced position. Look ahead. What do you see a couple of years out?
Well, I first have to say that nothing works until the market comes back. That's why we're in the crisis we're in. You've got a very capital-intensive industry, and because of the UAW agreements, labor is basically a fixed cost in this industry for the Detroit Three. So when you have a vehicle fall off from 16 million vehicles a year sold to something like 8 to 9, it is a total crisis and catastrophe. So as the market comes back, you will see some improvement. But whether that share goes to GM and Chrysler is hard to say. Chrysler still has the quality problems. They're better, but still not world class. I think GM and Ford have done notably better. I certainly hope people will give them a try, but I understand the experience of the woman who spoke earlier. And I agree that the government does bear a role in this. No other country has CAFE laws. No other country has the very harsh dealer franchise laws that make it impossible for a company to eliminate dealers without a bankruptcy proceeding. We've had a lot of problems here for a long time.
Well, the country is staring right at those now with GM in Chapter 11 and a big ownership position by U.S. taxpayers. Thank you, Logan Robinson, and thank you, Alan Meltzer. Thanks to Governor Granholm for joining us earlier in this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.